Every time it rains pennies from heaven. And don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune falling all over the town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down.
This is not one of his songs, but with hits like Put Your Head on My Shoulder and Diana, Paul Anka was propelled into heartthrob stardom in the 1950s and early 60s. After the British invasion, he became known more as a songwriter, most famously for creating My Way for Frank Sinatra, She's a Lady for Tom Jones, and the theme for The Tonight Show. His life is full of surprises. Although he was a regular with the Rat Pack in Las Vegas, he stayed out of the gossip pages and remained married to the same woman for 38 years. They had 6 children. In his new memoir, My Way, Paul Anka reminisces about his 5 decades in the music business. He also has a new album called Duets. I began by asking, so despite the songwriting, you've never stopped singing?
Always kept singing. Songwriting got a little eclectic in later years, obviously, as the business changed. But I've never stopped the craftsmanship of writing. I'm always writing for something. But the singing and the entertainment, it was ongoing for me because of the fact that I enjoy doing it and there's an audience out there for it. And it's something that I never want to stop doing.
Actually. And singing standards like Pennies from Heaven?
Yeah, well, that was when I put together Duets. It's an eclectic array of people. And I tried to get everything to match each artist. Thus, Michael Bublé, whose career I was a part of in the beginning, in producing his first album with David Foster, and staying in touch with Michael to the point where when I decided to do this, I said, come on down, let me put something together with a song that I think is kind of indigenous to what you're doing. And he's a great artist, and I'm so proud of him. So you got Pennies from Heaven with him. You've got Crazy with Willie Nelson, My Way with Sinatra, Do I Love You with Dolly Parton, and the list goes on and on. And a really great, great project to be on because you're with artists who are of the standard of being very professional. You know what they're about, and nobody's pulling any kind of diva outings whatsoever, and they enjoy doing it.
You were born and raised in Ottawa, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You write that you had an early desire to escape.
Mm-hmm.
What's about it? Weren't you interested in getting into Canadian government?
That was probably the last thing I wanted to do. No, I didn't want to step down even at that age. You know, we were a young country in the sense of living in the shadow of the U.S. I realized that under all that snow and the way that I was living up there with a great family background, good education, I fell in love with writing, and I worked in a local newspaper, and then I took shorthand and music classes, and all of a sudden this whole need to sing came out. Well, of course, you couldn't really have a career in Canada back then.
Although there have been a lot of famous singers who have come out of
Canada. Much later. Oh, yes. I mean, very proud of. Many, many, many much later. But originally, I was the first guy out of there, the supposed first teen idol. And I wanted to get down to New York City because this is where it was happening. This is where you had a shot of getting it done. And thus, on a break, a school break, a little money, I found myself sleeping in a bathtub at the Present Hotel in a mattress and made the rounds. I wound up at ABC and got a contract when I was 16 years old.
16.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time when doo-wop and rockabilly were the prevalent styles. Were you part of that next wave, Dion, Fabian, and a bunch of other people?
I was in the midst of all that. I was certainly influenced by the doo-wop. I loved all of it, you know, that street corner stuff.
And Elvis was already a big star.
Elvis had already started, of course. But I was in the middle of it. I think I was the first starting out as a songwriter, artist, publisher, et cetera, young teen idol. And the whole black experience was still around. It hadn't really crossed over. You know, we were the clergyman's answer to that music through Dick Clark when Fabian and Frankie Avalon and the group of us started to emerge. But doo-wop was still very much a part of our lives.
Well, you wrote songs that seem to just strike the right chord. And when you wrote Diana, I'm so young and you're so old. Mm-hmm. Were you still 16 at the time?
Yeah, I was 15 actually when I wrote it, 14 or 15. Of course, I always question myself if I wrote it today, it would be I'm so old
and you're so young.
But it was a 14 to 15 year old creation, for a girl that was 3-4 years senior to me back in Ottawa.
Well, you had to deal with the same sort of thing that we see today with people like Justin Bieber, going from obscurity. It was just some kid. And the next thing you know, girls are screaming every time they see you. That has to have a weird effect on a kid.
Very weird, but it was so lovely and delicious. I couldn't get first base with a girl when I was a teenager till I hit record. But it was part of the course. You know, you look at it today, it's a different industry. When I started, show business was in its infancy stage. Today, you know, these parents are grooming these kids from 4 on. I feel for these kids that are out there, the Justin Biebers and what have you. With all this money, they're under a microscope. It's not like back then when you could learn to fail and learn from it. You know, I feel for them because they really can't get a hold of themselves to deal with it. It's a really a tough scene today.
Well, what was your family's reaction? Your family were, your father was an immigrant, wasn't he?
Well,
your grandfather,
yes. I was raised in Canada, as were my father and my mother.
And the name Anka can't be the original name.
Well, it's an interesting story. There are no Ankas other than my grandfather in the Middle East, in a small village, a young girl got raped. And he and his friend, when there was no justice, they found this person, and they hung him. And the part of the rope and the noose is called an anka. And they fled from there, and they came to Canada. When they went over the border, they asked them what their name was. And my grandfather said, Anka. And it stuck. So when I looked back on the family tree, it became very interesting that that's derivative to that event that took place many, many years ago.
You found yourself at a very young age touring as part of a package with Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, James Brown, Little Richard.
All my idols back in Ottawa.
Did they teach you? Did they give you advice?
They taught me and taught me things I shouldn't do. So I made choices that worked in my benefit. You know, when I was a kid, I'd go to these rock and roll shows when Chuck Berry would hit town, Fats Domino, and invariably I'd break in backstage to get an autograph. And on one occasion, Chuck Berry, who I loved, I walked in and sang Diana to him. And he looked at me and says, terrible song, go back to school. Never happened. Fats Domino gave me a better reaction. And then a year later, Irving Feld, who was the promoter of the tour, who became like a mentor and father to me because he was looking after me when I came down to the United States, he signed me up, and I'm now on tour with these guys that I idolized. I didn't learn much from them. I think that the real lesson for me came later.
But they were all older than you.
Oh, of course they were. But I really started learning about my craft and what have you from guys like Sammy Kahn, who was a writer from the Rat Pack, when I worked with those guys in Vegas. But up until then, we all did one or two songs on these shows, and that was it.
How did the Cinema Verite film, Lonely Boy, which you made with Wolf Koenig and Roman, was it?
Polanski?
Kreuter?
Oh, Kreuter, yeah.
How did that come about? It really was the first film that showed what celebrity was like backstage.
Exactly. I, being from Canada and being aware of National Film Board, I was brought up on all of that in school, National Film Board. And I had an idea to contact him, say, come live with me 6 months, and I want you to do an unbiased piece on what it's like traveling with a young pop idol, blah, blah. And they did. And I said, now when you cut it, you just cut it the way you feel, but I want that whole National Film Board take, that Cinema Verite look. Well, they put it together, came out, did very, very well. We won every festival. It was used in universities, even to this day. The Beatles used it when they did their first film. Scorsese's used it for interiors. But it was a piece of film that was way ahead of its time. And I'm very proud of that film because, you know, I didn't stand over them and say, you know, make me look good here, make me say this.
And they didn't always make you look good.
No, they didn't. And I didn't want it that way. I didn't want it that way at all. I wanted the honesty of it.
Paul Anka has an autobiography, not a memoir, an autobiography called My Way, and a new CD called Duets. Sad news today. We read that Annette Funicello died. Yes. You dated her for a while?
Dated. We were teenagers. We were obviously, we had chaperones everywhere that we went. We were an item in the sense that we liked each other. Prefacing that, I must say that we lost a wonderful human being. She was a wonderful artist, very gracious to her fans, very dedicated, and my heart's out to her and her family. But we had a relationship that was very honest and lovely and sweet. got to a point where Disney and what have you, they didn't want me really to get too serious with her, nor her with I, for obvious reasons.
So here you are. You're this rock star. Mm. How did you wind up connecting with the Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin?
Well, very simple.
Was it more fluid in those days?
Well, you have to realize, going back to what I said, the pop music scene was in its infancy stage. Darren and all of us were just touring and saying, what comes tomorrow when this is over? All there was out there were these nightclubs that were run by a certain group of guys. Mm-hmm. You had Vegas run by a certain group of guys. And the guys... A family feeling with the boys, right. The other side of the Sopranos. So Sinatra and those guys were it for us. You know, we looked at them as kids and said, we got to be like them. You know, we're kids. We're just because we had stardom, it didn't mean we knew who we were. We looked up to them. We wanted to be like them. Thus, I started working the Copa. I was the youngest. Wound up in Vegas, the only place to play. The boys liked me. I made a lot of money. I kept my nose clean. Did very well. And there you are with Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis. We're all a part of that same club. Granted, I'm the youngest. I'm not a Rat Packer. I'm more like a mascot. And that's where my business was.
Well, you must have been a bit shocked by some of the things that went on, because you do reveal some stories here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That, well, if they were still alive, they might be upset. Frank Sinatra might very well have tried to have you whacked.
Oh, my goodness. No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, when you look at the... the honesty of what's in the book, a lot of that stuff, those guys were proud of doing. They're proud of being out there and cavorting and all of that. You look at Vegas today, it makes that look like a walk in the Swiss Alps with a trap family when you look at guns and gangs in Vegas. But back then, you know, anything that I say and then I've talked to them about, they've told me about, when you take it in a book and you're just reading print, you're lacking tonality and you're lacking how proud and happy and how much fun they had. You know, to the layman that may read it, and you must realize all this stuff that I talk about is public domain, but I was there. I saw it. I felt it. Someone on the periphery writing about it wasn't there. And a lot of that stuff that you read about Vegas and Sinatra and that, a lot of it's hearsay, but what's in there is what I experienced and what I knew and what I was told and what I shared with those guys.
Then came the British invasion. Uh-huh. Did you think, oh, gee, this is the end? After all, it was interesting that they were, the Beatles and mm-hmm. all the Rolling Stones, they were all making cover records of American rock, and yet right. at the same time, they were taking work away from the American rock artists.
Evolution. You know, I traveled the world when I started, everywhere, from Asia, South America, all over the world, and realized that we had the hold. Then all of these countries started to come out with their own domestic stuff. I knew the Beatles before they came here. We're in a time where you have to realize there's no CNN. The media was not driving the world back then. I'd come home from these trips. All we had to relate to was a radio. I met the Beatles in Paris. I met them in London. I felt it going on. And I'd come back and tell people about it. And they'd look at me, what? And it was my agent, Norman Weiss, when I came back, I told him about it. He's the one that went over and brought them over. So I was kind of prepared for it. But was I prepared when the invasion hit and we were off the radio? No. But I continued to write, Longest Day, Tonight Show Theme, writing for other artists. So it helped me get through all of that. What I did like about it, prior to the Beatles, we were not embraced as a mass of artists. It was all controversy, from Presley to all of us. What were we doing? We'll never last. The Beatles came over and opened the door. Madison Avenue embraced us. Everybody started to embrace young music. Now it was in the forefront. Now it was fashionable. We owe that to them.
Did you write My Way for Frank Sinatra? Did
yes.
he request it?
In inadvertent way. In knowing him all those years, he kept teasing me about writing. But I didn't have the courage to give him Puppy Love and Lonely Boy. You know, I'd be probably laying on the strip somewhere.
Having my baby.
Ooh, that would have been worse. Although I probably would have liked that better. So what happened was I was in Miami, and I was working at the Fontainebleau Hotel, which was the place back then. And he called me, and we went to dinner, and he informed me that he was quitting show business. He had enough, wanted to get out, but he was making one more album. And teased me, as he always did. You didn't write me a song. Went back to New York, where I was living at the time. 1 o'clock in the morning, I sat down. And by 5 o'clock, it was done. Read it to myself and said, metaphorically, this works for him. And now the end is near. Called him in Vegas. Took it out to him. Played him the demo. 2 months later, he called me. Phone, speaker, me in New York, played it for the first time.
Now, we have very little time, but you didn't originally want to give Sid Vicious permission to sing his version of My
Way? I questioned that, yeah. When I heard it, it was not, you know, coming off of Sinatra and other records, I said, wow, what is this? But then I came to understand his sincerity with it. And I'm not the kind of person that would sit down and shut somebody in their rights and their feelings.
Well, when you sit down to write a song, are you thinking still rock? Or are you thinking Cole Porter and Irving Berlin?
It depends on the song. You know, when you're thinking Longest Day, you're thinking legitimate. When you're thinking My Way, very legitimate. You're thinking She's a Lady for Tom Jones, very pop, very rock.
And when you're thinking about The Tonight Show, you're thinking about something that could played again and again for hundreds of years,
I think. Did not know that. Neither did Johnny.
You probably could just live off the royalties on that alone. Paul Anka. His book, My Way, an Autobiography, is published by St. Martin's Press. And there's also a new CD called Duets. Thank you so much for joining
us. More than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew.